And welcome to Adulting with Ebony, the podcast where each week I explore what it means to be a kick-ass and kind adult in our modern world. Expect strong language and viewpoints, as no topic is out of bounds here. My guests and I will navigate the complete spectrum from wildness to responsibility with compassion and curiosity rather than expectation. I'm Ebony Allard and I'm a misfit turned maven, an author, a coach and your host for Adulting with Ebony. Come on then, let's do this. Hey everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Adulting with Ebony. Today I am joined by Joanna Hunter of joannahunter.com and mistress of the woo-woo at innerpeace.com. Joanna is a spiritual life and business coach, published author, serial entrepreneur, and is one of my favorite people to talk to about all things that we can't see or hear and that we just know. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you. That was such a lovely welcome. I'm so excited to get to talk to you about all the woo.
So I'm going to start with a question that maybe seems a little weird. Mm-hmm. We talk about adulting on this show and what adulting mm-hmm. means. And I'd love to know what you would think adulting means, I guess, in the context of spirituality and kind of woo.
That's the difficult question because I don't really feel like I've reached adulthood and I'm 42. I feel in a way that I think, you know, personally, from the kind of point of view, what adulting is really taking what I would call radical responsibility for who you are from a spiritual perspective and stopping the disempowerment of blaming others for anything in your life and taking responsibility for how you're feeling, how you're processing what is coming in, the outside stimulus, how you're processing that. Because at the end of the day, that we are the receiver and the perceiver of our thoughts. And therefore, at some point, we need to take responsibility then for being the receiver and the perceiver of those thoughts. And so as we're receiving in the outside world and we're perceiving it, it is up to us. It's our responsibility of how we look at that. And if we're looking at that and saying, oh, everything's crap, everything's rubbish, well, you know, you're the perceiver and the receiver. So don't tell me then you're going to have a crap life, because if you're having a crap life, you're perceiving it that way. And you're in charge of how you perceive it. We can always tell a different story.
I love that, because for me, it really is about responsibility. And, you know, my whole existence here is really about this line between wildness and responsibility. And very often, you know, there's this preconceived idea that if we are going to be adults or we're going to take responsibility for our lives and our reality, that we can't have fun and that it means being very serious. And I, you can't see, but Joanna is shaking her head.
I disagree. That is why I refuse to put myself in the category of adults.
Well, and you know, I for me, adulting, which is different from being an adult necessarily, mm-hmm. you know, one just happens through the consequence of time and the other is a decision and an action in my mind.
Absolutely.
When we take radical responsibility, when we realize that we are the conscious creators of our reality, then in order to do that, like before you can actually consciously create anything, you have to take responsibility for your reality and realize that you are in charge.
Yes, that's huge. That's massive. And it's liberating, but it's scary, scary as shit. Because the thing is that, you know, suddenly the buck really does stop with you, you know, and you can't try and pass that buck. And I call it pulling a Bart Simpson. And, you know, and Bart Simpson is brilliant. It was like that when I got there, man. I didn't do it. You know, it wasn't my fault. You know, and that's, you know, we pull a Bart Simpson. And it's kind of cushy to do that because then it's not our fault. But the flip side of that, we're handing our power over. Because if it's not our fault, then it's somebody else's. And if it's somebody else's, they're always going to be able to have the keys to your kingdom and say, dance, monkey, dance, anytime that they want.
I love that. There's something in this, right? It's so simple and it's so difficult for people, right? We take partial responsibility or like areas of our lives where we're like, yeah, I'm totally responsible for that. One of my favorite quotes is an Abraham Hicks quote where they talk about being responsible for your happiness no matter what anybody else is doing.
Yes.
And for me, that was one of the first things I'd ever read in this kind of other world that I, you know, came into and just kept going, looking and looking and looking and absorbing and reading all this information. It was like, I know all of this, this is true. But that first piece of like, how could my happiness depend on me? Surely my happiness is circumstantial.
I went through the longest time in my life believing that happiness was some weird ass planning aligning. You had to just be super, super lucky that that was going to happen for you. And then, you know, a little bit of my history, but I built 4 six-figure businesses between the age of 23 and 26. And then I worked in the mall for a decade. And, this is usually the time that people like kind of look at me and like go, oh my God, but we kind of know that that story is not going to end well because I had a huge burnout. And I was recently speaking to someone and they said to me, that was not a burnout. That was spirit cracking you wide open, rewriting your DNA and infusing your body with light. And it's so true because that was a moment that I changed my loop thought, which now knowing and understanding the law of attraction, the law of the manifestation. So quick recap on that, like energy attracts like energy and everything is energy. And so I had this loop thought of life is shit, right? You can imagine what I was manifesting, right? Quite a lot of shit. And while I was laying in the hospital bed, it was the first time that I changed that loop thought. And I kept thinking to myself, there's just got to be more to life. There's just got to be more to life. And at that stage, I had no idea about things like the law of attraction, law of manifestation, any of the kind of universal laws or anything like that. But what I had done unconsciously was the minute that I posed that question to the universe was obliged to answer me. And it began to show me that there was more to life. And I began to get like stalked by the law of attraction. And I kid you not, like everywhere I went, it was there. Everyone I talked to, they were talking about it. You know, like it was on the telly, it was everywhere. And I was like, damn. And when things get really, really hyped, like the Harry Potter movies, like I was a diehard, like I'm not going to see them. And then of course, like I went to see them. I was like, oh, this was brilliant. But when things are hyped, I tend to be like, no, I don't want it. I really resist. So it was so funny because I had done exactly the same thing with the law of attraction and then I remember it came into my life and at first it was not pretty because it told me that everything in my life was my fault. And the woman that I was at that stage in my life was so not ready to take responsibility for everything and I was raging. I thought, how dare you? I only finished the book so that I could write a kick-ass complaint letter. And I'm laughing at myself now, like, because I was so full of piss and vinegar, you know, like, I was such, so, like, and so angry and things. And I just remember, you know, getting to the end of that book, having a stream of tears down my face and thinking, holy crap, this is it. Because then I realized, like, I had been manifesting on default constantly. And of course, when I had a really honest conversation with myself and I said, well, what is my predominant thoughts? I realized, life is shit, top of the list. Everything is hard and difficult. Why does this happen to me? You know, like any one of those would be like a predominant thought on any given day. And what was my life like when I looked outside myself? Like it was hard. I shoveled a lot of shit. I felt very under pressure, you know, like all of those things. So, you know, I couldn't refute it. I couldn't refute that it was, yeah, I was like, there's something in this. So I began doing what the original book that I read said to me, which was just to really change my thoughts and to be mindful of my thoughts. And to every time I caught myself having a thought that I didn't want, a result of energy that I didn't want, it's just to shift it into a thought that I did want. And that's what I began doing. And within 2 weeks, my life had really radically changed so much. But this is way too weird. This must be a fluke. So I bought a book for my mom and I bought a book for my brother and I said, like, read the whole thing. Like, don't get mad at the book. Like, read the whole thing first, then you can get mad. But like, I don't think you will be mad after you finish it and then do exactly what it says. So they off they went and they did it and their lives began to change. And I thought, we, you know, but we share genetics. So now we're a genetic fluke.
I love the questioning and the questioning. So when did that change? When was the bit that I have quite a lot of conversations about with my clients, right, is the difference between trying to change your life, trying to manifest something, and deciding or claiming it as yours already and stepping into the energy of embodying it?
Well, about 30 books later and a lot of very happy friends.
Yes.
And I was totally convinced. I mean, there was this woman that I was friends with, and she could make going to the shop for a pint of milk a tragedy. Everything. She was so, you know, she was a lovely woman and she had a heart of gold, but really, really everything that could possibly go wrong to this person went wrong on a regular basis for her. And I gave her a book, and then I didn't see her for about 6 weeks. Life got busy and whatever and things like that. And then she says, oh, you know, are you free for coffee? She sent me a message and I said, yeah, sure, you know, I'll come and have coffee with you. And I arrived and I remember this woman walked through. And I've always had spiritual sight. So it's a weird thing because I've always been able to see auras and spiritual sight. And at first I didn't recognize her because her energy field was so different that I had to do like 3 or 4 takes to be like, holy crap, is this my friend? When she sat down, I thought it was the invasion of the body snatchers. I mean, like, it was a completely different woman speaking to me. She was so upbeat. She was like, you wouldn't believe what I've manifested, and I've done this, this, and this, and this is like magic. And I was like, holy crap, there is something in this. And then I literally studied with any teacher that would have me. I wanted to know it from every single angle. I studied quantum physics. I studied particle physics. I studied Einstein. I studied Nikola Tesla. That was the science. I studied Wicca. I studied Kabbalah. I studied law of attraction with pretty much any teacher that was teaching in the UK at the time. And just kind of like devouring this information so that I could know it. And then I remember about 6 months into this process of literally ODing on all things law of attraction and mindfulness and radical responsibility, I went to this little, I used to call him my little guru guy, and he was a little Ayurvedic doctor, and he said to me, you know, Joanne, if you really want to know something and you really want to know a subject, you teach it, because your students will teach you as much as you teach your students. And that was like a big old fat permission slip to start teaching. And I just ran out of that little his little Ayurvedic surgery where he did acupuncture and stuff like that, and it was all his little herbs and everything. And I just kind of ran out there. I got in the car. I said to my husband, he was driving at the time, and I said to my husband, take me up to Borders Bookshops. So he drove up to Borders Bookshop. I rocked in there. I went, I want to speak to the manager. The poor assistant did that, you know, like she just sucked a lemon. Like thinking, oh crap, like, you know, because she's asked for the manager. And I was like, yeah, it's nothing bad. Manager strolls up and I'm like, hey, I want to come and speak, and I'm going to come and speak in your store on this date. And if you advertise it in your store, I will sell these book titles. And over the course, like while I'm sat in the car, I'd been scribbling on the back of an envelope. So he got handed this like dirty envelope with like all the book titles that I was willing to promote. And he started looking at me like, who the fuck are you? And was like, and what's in it for you? And I said, I got to teach about the law of attraction. And he went, okay. And I think I just really just didn't give him a choice to say no. So very next day I arrived, and I think he thought, she's just a nut, she's not going to come back or anything. But the very next day I came back, had all my posters done, gave him the posters, gave him leaflets for his counter, told them if they were selling like anything esoteric or anything like kind of woo, come and give a leaflet to those people that were buying those books for the next week, and then I would be back the next week to teach. So 50 people turned up, and I rocked up, taught, supposed to be there for an hour. I was teaching for 2 hours later. The questions were flying. I was loving it. I was like totally in my zone. I was like, oh, wow, this is what I've been born to do. And then I sort of said thank you for allowing me to do this. And then I was leaving, the manager comes running up after me and says, oh my god, that was amazing, that was brilliant. And he handed me a £50 gift card, And I was like, are you kidding me? It was like a crack addict being handed crack, you know, because like my choice of crack was books at that point. And so I was like, oh my God. And he was like, we would love to have you back. I'll be back next week, I said. So the next day I dropped in more posters. And this time 75 people turned up. As everybody that had been before had told all their friends and they all came. So 75 people turned up. And again, taught for 2 hours, supposed to be there for an hour, taught for 2 hours. And then the third time, the guy from the store said, we can't like literally host anymore because over 128 people showed up. And he says the shop's like not big enough for people to come for this. But people were just absolutely loving it. And I learned so much from my students' questions, like the questions like, I'm trying to do this or I'm trying to do that. And I realized in that moment what my little guru guy had kind of taught me was that it's one thing to learn information in a book. It is another thing to breathe life into the information and make it real for someone. And in that process of being able to gift that to other people to make it real for them, they had in turn made it so real for me. And then I knew this was what I had been put on this planet to do.
And were you ever scared in that process that you would look silly or that you might fail or that you might not know the answer or anything like that?
No, not at all, because I am one of these weird people that like completely loves public speaking. Mm-hmm. It's like a joy for me to do it. And I've always been like that. Even since a child, I've always been like that as a child. So I never ever had that thought process of like, you know, the knees knocking, feeling sick. Like I feel so pumped to go and do like a public speaking thing. So I never get nervous, which I suppose in a way kind of really helps in that way for public speaking. But and also as well, I think a big part of it is I've always given myself permission to not know the answer. Mm.
I think that's huge. And I think so many people or so often in this part of the world particularly, mm-hmm. in order to be an expert at something or in order to get paid for it. So in order to get paid for it well and be respected, you need to be an expert. In order to be an expert, you need to know everything. And you know, that kind of logic of thinking really traps people, I think.
Totally. And I mean, it's so easy to work with a question that you literally seriously don't know the answer to, because all you say is like, that is a great question and I haven't got a bloody clue. But what I'm going to do for you is I'm going to figure out the answer. I'm going to find the answer for you. I'm going to figure out the answer. I'm going to find out the answer for you. And if you're on social media, for instance, you can say I can post it on my social media. Or, you know, back in those days, social media wasn't even that popular. Like it was 12 years ago. So it wasn't like this mass explosion that we've seen of social media now. So, you know, it would have been like, I could email you the answer. Like, that's not a problem. Like I can get back to you on that. So, but that never happened. And the reason that never happened is since birth, I've always been a medium. Mm. So even when I was in this complete asleep state of being, and you know, I was still able to give messages from the spirit world and to work with my mediumship. And I was working with my mediumship. I owned a spiritual events company. It was one of my four companies that I had. And so what happened was, as I was doing these talks in these Borders bookshops, I started to become very aware that there was a level of genius that I was pretty sure I didn't possess coming through me. And the more questions the audience asked, the more I could feel myself sitting like in the back of a theater eating popcorn and watching and thinking, man, that was so good. And you know, but it wasn't me. And that was the moment that I began to become really, really aware of my spirit team and how they worked with me. So they work in a very, very similar way to the way Esther Hicks works. So literally this absolute sublime knowledge comes through. And one of the reasons why I kind of really know that it's not me is the simplicity leaves you like reeling. It's like, huh? Oh, of course. And it's we know it. Like it will resonate with every cell in your body and you're like, hot damn, that is a good answer. And hot damn, I know that that's the truth. And you know the truth. But the simplicity of it is like, you have your questioning as a human being. You're like, you can't be that easy. It can't be that simple. And so every time you apply, it's
I have
that.
Another question for you around that. And then then we've done that thing where we've just talked and talked and talked.
I know. Oh,
and nearly a whole episode. So you didn't resist this, right? So even, like I said, there was a period of your life where you were seeing spirit and you were in a state of really kind of being in this mediumship place. Mm. And maybe you didn't understand it, and maybe you grew into learning how to kind of appreciate and channel it through. Have you worked with anyone or seen anyone who's been scared of that and therefore kind of resisted it? And
oh my God, all the time. I mean, I spent years teaching mediumship, teaching spiritual connection, teaching intuition, teaching every form of tool of divination that's out there. So I spent like good 10 years doing this. And yeah, I see many people very resistant. And then of course I worked as a professional medium and psychic. So I did readings for years, you know, sometimes like 5 to 6 readings a day, every day for like 365 days practically. So yeah, so like I've seen lots and lots of people being super resistant. One of the funniest clients that I ever had was it was a girl that phoned me up. She wasn't the client, but she phoned me up and she was coming for a reading that afternoon, and she said, "Do you have another slot?" And I said, "Sure, I have another slot." And she never told me who was coming, so I said, "Oh, I'll book them in." But I had no name to put in my diary. Now, what I would do is I would meditate on the name, and the vibration of that person's name would connect me to them, and I would begin to download information for them. So I would like fill usually an A4 sheet of paper easy with stuff. And so this person that had no name, I was like, okay. And all I got was this father and spirit, and I couldn't get anything else. I just got a father and spirit, and then I heard Stephen. And I was like, right. So I wrote it down. And so I get the girl in, do her reading. She goes, she's really happy. Bring her family through and things like that, and give her some guidance and stuff. And so she's off and she's happy. And then I bring this young man in, so he's her boyfriend. So it sits down, and I said to him, you have your father in the spirit world. And he says, yes, but he's so tight. His energy is so close and so tight. And I'm like, oh my goodness. And so I'm trying to tune into this energy, but because his connection is so shut down, because he is shitting himself. Mm. So I said to him, are you a bit scared? And he went, nah. I said, well, how about you just take your jacket off? Honestly, like, you think I'd ask him to strip, you know, because he wanted that jacket so he could run for that door. You know, he kept looking to the door, and I'm thinking, and so I just got him to relax, and we started doing some breathing and just getting him to like really, really relax in his energy so that I could get in with his energy. Mm. And so we started again, and I said, you know, I have your father in the spirit world. I want you to assure you that I'm not going to tell you anything like weird, wonderful, or anything that would be like, you know, like you would be totally scared or like any crap, like you're going to die next week or anything like that. That's so not what I do here. So I said, if you allow this process to come through, you should leave really, really uplifted with some clear guidance on the next steps for your life, and hopefully some reconnection with your loved ones in the spirit world. So he was like, right, okay. So he accepted his father, and we gave some information and things like that. And I said, I also got the name Stephen, and it feels like it really, really relates into your father, but I know it's not your father's name. And he was like, no, can't take it. And I was like, okay, well, I'll give it to you, because quite often other people come back later and then they say, oh, that name was right. So anyway, after convincing me, he was telling me he wasn't scared at all or anything like that. So after the reading, I come out and his girlfriend goes, how did he get on? It was his very first reading. And I said, well, I could tell. But I said, I think we got there, didn't we, to the guy? And he was like, yeah, God, it was amazing. It was really, really good. And I said, well, I got his dad through. And he was like, oh, you wanted your dad through. And I said, but I think he was a bit scared to start with. And his face sort of dropped, because he'd been saying, no, I'm not scared. And she turned around and said, he was shitting himself. And I said, yeah. And I said, the only thing he couldn't take, he could take everything that I gave him, but I said, the only thing he couldn't take was Stephen, the name Stephen. And she looked at him and she went, Stephen. And he went, what? And he was so scared and so resistant that he wasn't even able to take his own name.
That's such a wonderful story.
And that is what happens when we close down our own connection. Like, even a medium's not going to be able to get in there. Even a medium, he's got a shit ton of experience and has been doing it since she was born, cannot get in there, because it's us that controls our vibration. And so if you are scared and resistant, you really need to ask yourself what you're really scared of, because this is who we are. This is our true nature. We are source energy. We are the universe. So there isn't going to be anything sort of scary or frightening coming through. But as you feel more fear, you start to attract more fear to you. So the most important thing that you can do is to talk yourself off the ledge and be like, you know, come on, I'm going to relax here. I'm going to take some deep breaths. And then as you do that, you open up your connection and you open up the conduit by which spiritual communication, even through for yourself, to be able to use it as a tool yourself, or for somebody else to read you much more clearly. But when the connection's really tight, and one of the things that I teach my students is to look for that tight connection, because if the connection's so tight, they need to loosen their client's grip a little bit, so that they need to go through some relaxation techniques to relax that client so that they can get a better quality of reading through for that client, because you're reading that client's energy.
And you know what? So one of the things that I talk about quite a lot with my clients and with everyone really is one of the best tools that we have. And then I feel like I'm, you know, somewhere I'm doing them a disservice, or they're expecting some extravagantly complicated thing. And I'm like, no, the most powerful tool that you have at your disposal in any given circumstance or situation is your breath. Like, if you are tired, if you are stressed, if it's, you're scared, if whatever is going on and things feel overwhelming or unclear, you have a tool that you have with you every single day and every single moment that you can access that's going to take you into a place of solving it. And all you need to do is connect with your breath and slow it down, and then connect with your heart space.
And listen. You know, there's some like really cool shit actually with the breath as well, but I don't know if you know all this, but I'm sure you know the majority of it. One of the things is that when our cells have got lots and lots of oxygen, our cells naturally revert to an alkaline state. And in 1932, Dr. Otto Wahlberg won the Nobel Peace Prize for discovering that disease, including cancer, cannot live in an alkaline environment. And so when we breathe shallow, our cells don't get enough oxygen, and we revert into an acidic state of being, which basically does not optimize us for health and well-being or any of that stuff. And so when we breathe deeply, we breathe really well, and we oxygenate our organs and everything, we're breathing that breath through into our organs and everything, what happens is that we naturally move in to alkali state of being. And as we move into the alkali state of being, we're literally optimizing our body for health. And so we're hardwired and designed to be relaxed and happy.
I love that. You know what? And on that bit, I'm going to wrap it and ask you whether you will tell everyone where they can find out more. So if they want to connect in with you, read more, where's the best place for them to come find you?
Sure. So I have a couple of websites. The first one is joannahunter.com. And the next one is a really, really exciting project that is launching on the 1st of May, 2018. And that is myinnerpeace.com. And it is where modern mystics gather. So it's going to be a community-based blog with lots of really amazing people. And I'm hoping that Ebony will say yes to writing me a blog post for it.
I'll say yes now.
And of course, you can find me on social media, on all social media channels. I am Joanna Hunter, C-O-M for com. So just the whole, all one word, Joanna Hunter, C-O-M. Find me on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, you name it. I'm on it.
Fantastic, thank you. And I'd love to end with a little confession of sorts. We're going to do our
I'm an adult, but I believe in fairies and angels, and I love to have my pudding before my dinner.
Ah, yes, one after my own heart. I love both of those. I am an adult, but now I want to steal both of yours.
Have them. We can share.
They're both true for me too. You know, I absolutely believe in fairies just as much now, and you know, all sorts of other things more so now probably than I did when I was a kid. And pudding, sometimes I eat breakfast pudding for my breakfast.
Oh, good one. I did that the other day actually. There was a bit of leftover cheesecake.
Perfect breakfast portion.
So that's my confession.
Much for joining me. It's been really, really lovely to talk to you
today. It's been awesome. Thank you so much for for having me, and I hope that this has brought your audience some light, and that is my intention and my words.
This has been Adulting with Ebony. I have been Ebony. You have been great. Thank you so much for all of your support. Please keep listening, liking, rating, sharing so that more people can come and enjoy and engage with us. Really, thank you. I'll see you next time.